it's a strange feeling having a chabura with no people here. But unfortunately, we missed last night. So here we go. I want to start by asking a simple question, which of course there won't be any answers to. But it's quite a revelation for the brothers when they find out that Yosef is still alive. I don't think that they saw this coming at all. What's their reaction and what convinces them? And I think you have to ask the same question for their father. What turns Yaakov around to recognize all of a sudden that, yeah, this is like real news? Because he doesn't take to it well right away. So Rashi says that what turns the brothers around is that Yosef shows his bris milah. And somehow when he shows the bris milah, boom, they're not comforted, but they acknowledge that this is really Yosef, or at least they start talking. What about dad? So let's take a look, starting with Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer Yosef alachav kashuna ilai, vayigashu, vayomer Yosef achicham shemechartem utzim tzayma. He says, listen, I'm Yosef, your brother, you sold me to Egypt. Vatalti atzuva yichar b'neichem kemechartem utihena. And don't worry that you sold me here. Kilemechya shalchani elokim lefneichem. Because God did all of this in order to sustain you. Kizesh natayim erav b'karavar, etzur chameshanim asherin charish katzir. Truth is that this is only year two of the famine. You have five more years to come. And God has sent me to bring to you Sheirit Ba'aretz, a salvation to the land, and to give you guys what to live. And then he says, listen, it's really important, bring my dad down here. What happens? He falls on the shoulders of his brother Binyamin, and he cries, and Binyamin cries on his shoulders as well. Which is interesting, because take a look at the next pasuk. He then kisses all his brothers and cries to them, and then afterwards his brothers talk to him. What's interesting is that there is no reciprocity. He cries, and his brothers have no reaction in return. And this rumor spreads the house of Paro, saying the brothers of Yosef have come, and it's good in the eyes of Paro. Now, of course, it's good in the eyes of Paro, because if he believes that Yosef has contributed to society in such a way, imagine 12 Yosefs and what they could do for society. So he says that Paro says to Yosef, listen, tell your brothers the following, that they should fill up with food and go to Eretz Canaan. And take your father and their houses, and come to me, and I will give them the best of the land of Mitzrayim, and they will eat from the fat of the land. So Paro gives the command, take from Egypt agalot letapchem l'nasheichem, agalot, wagons for your family, and carry your father and come. And don't be concerned about your stuff, because you'll be able to take the best of the land. You know, anybody that tries to downsize knows that it's an overwhelming job to clean through your house. But what makes it even more overwhelming, truly, is the thought that I'm going somewhere else, and what do I need, what don't I need? That, I think, takes a lot out of people. But if somebody is told, listen, you're going to be relocated somewhere else, and don't worry, once you get there, you'll have everything you could possibly imagine, and then some. So then it becomes a lot easier. There are things I'm going to take for sentimental value, and there are certain things that are irreplaceable, but everything else I can get rid of and I'm fine. I think that that's kind of what Paro is trying to say to them, is why you have to worry. Just leave everything and come. And the brothers do that. They take food, and Yosef gives them agalot. He gives them agalot, and on top of that, he gives him tzedel adarech, and each brother is given chalifot smalot, a change of clothing, of Binyamin natan shlosh meo kesef v'chamesh chalifot smalot. And Binyamin gets 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing, which again just begs the question, what was he thinking? Why would he do something that would reignite the and fan the flame of the jealousy that existed? Isn't that, after all, what got them here in the first place? They end up here because Yosef had been given extra clothing. Yosef had been given extra, better treatment. And yet Yosef does the same thing. But perhaps there is a thought behind it. Perhaps his thought is that if he does this, what actually ultimately will happen is it will strengthen Yaakov's belief that the brothers have moved past any petty jealousy in the past. Ulaviv shalach kazod asarach amorim, and dad gets 10 donkeys laden, carrying the best of Egypt, Esratanot, Noso Barva Lechem, in addition to 10 donkeys that are full of food, Umazon, Laviv Ladarach, and everything that dad would need along the way. Veshalach et Achav, he sends his brothers, Vayelechu, and they go, Vayomerle Maltir Gazubadarach, and he says to them, don't concern yourself, don't fight along the way. Now, what does that exactly mean? So, one possibility is, don't talk about whose fault this is, even though that really is probably something that the brothers are going to do, right? They're going to have a discussion. Whose fault was this? Why did we get into this place in the first place? And each one will say, you know, Reuven, if you hadn't suggested what you had suggested, we would never have done it. And Shimon Levi, of course, your suggestion is what got the ball rolling. And then Yehuda, if you had taken a different approach, perhaps we wouldn't be here at all. Another possibility is Rashi suggests Al Tirguz Ubedarach, don't talk about halacha. Why? Because when you get yourself involved in a very, very big halachic discussion, what often happens is you lose track of where you're up to, and when that happens, so ultimately you end up getting lost along the way. I know that personally, I was driving once and I was on my phone. Speaker, of course, and I was very, very busy in my conversation, and I was upstate New York, and what happened? As I'm driving, I realized that I missed the exit that I needed, and I realized like about a mile past where I was, and I ended up having to drive 18 more miles to get to the next exit, and then 18 more miles in the return direction to get where I needed to be. What a shame, what a waste, what a frustration. And so, essentially, Al Tirguz Bedarach is just stay focused and get back to where you need to get. Go home. Fine. Vayalu mimitzrayim vayavo Eretz Kanaan al Yaakov aviyem. And they go up from Egypt, proof that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other lands, and they come to Eretz Kanaan to their father. Vayidu leimor od Yosef chai v'chum hu moshev v'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. So, maybe not the best way to do this, al pi pshat, is you have your dad is 130 years old, and you have to tell him news like this probably should be done in a much more smooth way, which the Medrash actually says that they were nervous about this, so they sent in Serach to sing, and when Serach sang, it kind of calms the whole situation down. But what do they say? So they say Yosef is alive and he's the leader of Egypt. And his heart skips a beat, and he does, because he doesn't believe them. It just doesn't sound possible. And so what happens? They just can't believe it. He can't believe it. So what happens? So what happens is they tell him everything that Yosef had said. They show the agalot, and what happens? Yaakov's spirit comes back alive. Now, that's an interesting point. What is it that convinces Yaakov that this is for real? Right? What pushes Yaakov over? And the pasuk is not clear because it's by the rule of Kodere Yosef, Asher Divrelem, boom, A, right? They repeat all the words of Yosef, and then, wait, there's more. But they also show the agalot. And then Yaakov sees this, Vatechiruach Yaakov Aviyam, Yaakov's spirit comes alive. So which one is it? Is it that the spirit comes alive because of the words, which really they had words inside the house also, or is it the agalot? So Rashi says, Ekol Divrei Yosef, Siman Masar Lehem. Rashi says that he offered a sign. probably assuming that there was a possibility that his dad would not be 100% certain that this is true. Maybe the person in possession of this knowledge is making up the story. Why? He knows of Yosef and he's pretending to be Yosef. Whatever the case may be, he's not sure that his dad is going to believe it or that his dad will accept that he's truly Yosef. Yosef, the Yosef that he was prior to the Mechira. So Yosef sends a message saying, what does he say? He shares a Torah that he was learning, Parsha Egla Rufa. He had learned Egla Rufa. So the Torah actually, Rashi is addressing a lot of problems in the Pasuk. First of all, the Pasuk says, Vayar et ha'agalot, asher shalach Yosef. But these are not the wagons that are sent by Yosef. These are the wagons that were sent by Paro. But he says, I want you to understand that, Dad, the last Torah that we were learning was Egla Rufa. It's been 22 years. Aval lo shachachti. Aval, I didn't forget. I've kept track. I've kept tabs. I've listened to what you have told me, and that Torah is still with me. And when that happens, at Techi Ruach Yaakov, Shartal of Shechina Sheperishmenu, he once again has the Spirit of God, Nevuah comes back, Ruach HaKodesh comes back to him. So Rashi's suggesting that the Agalot are not really Agalot, meaning they are Agalot, but the importance of the Agalot is simply that Yosef is saying, I didn't forget that we learned Torah. Now the problem with Rashi is that Agalot and Egla Arufa are not the same thing. An Agala is a wagon, and Egla Arufa, yes, it is the same letters, Agala and Egla, but Egla comes from Egel, and Agala comes from something completely different. So it just seems as though Rashi's taking a stretch. It's a little bit of a reach to say, oh, this, you know, the Torah and the Agala are the same thing. So let's take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam offers a completely different answer. The Rashbam says that these were the royal imperial wagons. You could not get these wagons if not for Paro. Paro did not let a single wagon leave Egypt without his permission. When Yaakov sees this, it touches off in him that, whoa, this really happens to be working. Yosef must be who he's saying he is. So that's a possibility. Now, Shaddal says that he looks outside and says, oh, shelo ayu lo imachem alichatam. He recognizes that there must be truth to their story because this, I know what I sent down to Egypt and I know what's returning and it's not the same thing. Ah, must be that Yosef through Paro sent them. Now the Netziv actually answers another point, which I believe tells us what's really going on in the psyche of Yaakov. Yaakov really probably spent the last 22 years wondering how authentic the brother's story was. Now he has no reason to believe, he can't figure out what really did happen, but he does sit there and say, I don't know, something just seems off with the story. And so when the brothers come back and say, oh, Matzanu, we found Yosef, there's a piece of Yaakov that says, I'm not buying it. I don't know if you guys are quite the authentic people that you are. So listen to what Netziv says. The Ha'emek Dover says, Torah Rav Kazein Lachush L'Sheker. He says, this much the brothers could not possibly do to pull off a lie. Yes, there are times where you sit there and say, like, I don't know, is it true or is it not true? Stealing imperial wagons from Egypt, that's way too much to be able to pull off if it's not real. Okay, fine. I would ask the question, which pshat seems more easy to swallow? Rashi, Egla Arufa connection, or Rashbam, Shadal, Netziv, who basically say that there is a piece of the story that is being played with in order to help us understand where we're up to. And I think that probably most people would assume that Reshbam Shadal Netziv are much more, much closer to the Pshat. Now, the Kli Yakar has a beautiful explanation where he says, V'chidarko shel Rashi lehotzi ha-mikra midei pshuto legamri. Yes, Rashi, even though he often will say, I am Pshat, Rashi's not Pshat. But when Rashi deviates from Pshat, it's very rare that he deviates in a way that is so far removed from Pshat. And that seems to be what he's doing here. So, and he also says, if all I needed was Egla Arufa, I don't need multiple Agalot. I just need one Agala, and that would be Agala. So he goes into this whole thing saying that actually what Yosef did was Yosef sent one additional Agala of his own that accompanied Paros. And that's kind of where it all comes from. But the truth is, I want to try to understand a little bit more about this whole story and why Rashi has to pick out Egla Arufa of all. So interestingly, and I think that this is fascinating, is that the story of Egla Arufa is the story really of Yosef. The story of Egla Arufa, the halacha of Egla Arufa is, what if I have someone that a dead body that shows up and we can't identify how this person ended up there? How did this person get killed? So what we do is we turn to all the neighboring towns, we bring the Sanhedrin in, we measure to the nearest town, and we say, it's on you, nearest town, because likely this is where the person came from, and you, it's your mistake for not having properly accompanied this person outside of the borders of the city. Now, why is it that we do that? The answer is we do it that way because we want to make a message. We want to make a point. The point that we're driving home is that it's on you. If somebody comes to your town, it's on you to make sure that they leave b'shalom u'b'shalva. And clearly that did not happen here. And that's the message that we are, that we're being told here. Now, I think that we need to step into the head of Yosef for just a minute, because Yosef is exactly that person. What happens with Yosef? Yosef is sent on a mission by his dad. And even though the Kli Yakar says that Yaakov accompanied him a little bit, but clearly the amount of accompanying that he needed was not sufficient. His father sends him to a dangerous place, unattended, by himself. And his brothers jump him, throw him in a pit, and ultimately end up selling him as a slave. This mitzvah of Egla Arufa is Yosef. And Yosef says, Dad, for real? Let's just understand how this went. You and I were talking. You sent me on a suicide mission. And on the way there, the last mitzvah you send me, that you teach me, is Egla Arufa, for real, Dad? Now, there is a concept in halacha that before you leave someone's company, you should share with them a dvar Torah. I had a chavrusa in Israel, Yisara Dani HaKohen, a Teimani guy. When we were leaving Israel, I think he drove me to the airport. And on his way there, he said, I'm going to share with you a dvar Torah. Why? Because you'll always remember me. Now, I have to tell you, I don't remember anything else about the Torah I learned with Yisara Dani HaKohen. But that dvar Torah is a dvar Torah that I still share often at simchas. And just in general, and it came from this guy. So I've used this Dvar Torah 20 times over the amount of time that I had with him. And so I remember him. So Yaakov is saying the same thing. When you leave someone, what do you have to do? You have to leave them with the Dvar Torah. But why would you share a Dvar Torah when you're leaving someone on a place like this with a Dvar Torah that talks about possible death? And then it pretty much actually happens. So Yosef, and this is the beautiful explanation of Rabbi Alex Israel, Yosef's response to his dad is that, Dad, I want you to understand something. I possibly am sending you one of two messages. Either Yosef is sending a message back of anger. He's saying, Dad, how could you do this to me? You sent me by myself on this crazy mission? That's one possibility.
And it's an answer that makes a lot of sense. Yosef doesn't respond to his father. Yosef has the ability to call, to return the message, to send the message to his father, to say, Abba, I'm okay, for 22 years. And he doesn't. Why? Because perhaps Yaakov, in his mind, has done something to him. And Yosef can't let it go. So what does he do? He says, Belev Sheli, I'm not ready to let it go. But there's another possible answer. And I think that this is the beauty of Eglah Arufa. See, Eglah Arufa tells us gives two messages. On the one hand, it says that we point to that city and say, it's on you. Magi alachem. You guys deserve to be punished. Why? Because you did not do what you needed to do. You didn't accompany this person. You didn't care for this person. Yeah. But there's another piece. The other piece is that after we get over that, there's a redemptive piece. And that redemptive piece is the message of Me'ashem Yatzah Hadavar Hazeh. Is that there are times where things are, it's God, and it's not us. And therefore, we cannot be held responsible for it. Perhaps what Yosef is saying to his father is, this is the redemptive piece of Eglah Arufa. Dad, when this happens and the brothers come to you and you see all this, you're going to turn and say, no, who's responsible for this? Who made this happen? Who can I blame for Mechiras Yosef? And Yosef says, Abba, it's like Eglah Arufa. Once we've identified the city and they've brought their karban, we move past it. The same way Yosef says to his brothers, Me'ashem Yatzah Hadavar Hazeh, this is from God, move on. Don't get yourself all worked up in a knot about it. It's the same thing here. Abba, let's move on. Yosef offers a redemptive component to the family dynamic. Yosef says, let's move on. That's what we have to do. And I think that that's a very profound message, because so often in life, our mistake is that things happen, they're not always so good, and the hardest thing for us is, how do we move on? Yosef says, don't look to see who did it, just move on. And God willing, our family can be reunified. That's what Yosef offers. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and God willing, we'll be able to learn together next week.